Terribly.
I love how quiet it got after I said that.
That's because it wasn't funny.
That's what I look for. It's funny to me, and that's all.
That's all that really
We're
matters.
All here to entertain ourselves.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Did I Save, a gaming podcast where we talk about how games change and how they change us. And today is a subscriber suggestion. We talk about our favorite game developers and why.
You told me I was going to be talking about politics.
Well, I lied. No one likes to talk about politics. Not even politicians.
Okay. I do, but not on a recording, so I'm not going to do that.
Perfect.
Shout out to our subscriber for recommending this category to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Appreciate you. I'm excited to talk about it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I don't know why I'm talking like it's my episode. I'm just ready to start the conversation, I guess.
I think it's a great topic. So,
yeah.
I'm interested to see what you guys say.
Mm-hmm. Well, my first question for you guys was going to be, like, apart from who your favorite developers are, what is important to you and a good developer? What do you think
constitutes
makes the difference for you between just like good, solid developer? Like, I'll check out their stuff, and like the developers that you're always keeping an eye on and like always watching to see what they're doing next.
There's two things, and I don't think you can be both at the same time. So it's like there's two things I appreciate developers though. And one is they create what they want to make. Mm-hmm. They treat it like a piece of art.
They have a vision.
And they're passionate about it and they have a vision. And the other is they listen to feedback and they make a game that is
a
for
huge
the players.
One for me. That is huge. That they are willing.
I agree.
And that they not just listen to their fans in the sense that they're like, oh, you guys seem mad. I guess we should not do that.
Right.
But to be like, let's open the dialogue and see what you guys think.
And if you can find a balance between those two things, it's difficult to find a developer that does both. You mostly see one or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You either get a product that is just pandering to as many people as possible that the game can feel kind of just like not. There's no passion in it.
Yeah.
It is for the money.
I call it market researching something to
Correct.
Death. When you're constantly trying to dial in numbers instead of like sticking to a vision or like being very open and communicative about that process. Like, I think that's I can't remember their name. The developers of Hades. It's the
Supergiant
studio. Supergiant. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all about listening to fans and like not just not listening, but like, that's why Hades and Hades 2 are as good as they are, is because they were constantly letting people play it, taking that feedback and meaningfully changing the game over and over and iterating based on like not just what they saw, but also what people were telling them. And I think if anybody strikes the balance you're talking about, it's Supergiant. Like, they're fantastic for that.
Okay. And I would definitely agree with your take, Ryan, is about like, you know, are they creative? Are they listening to fan feedback? Are they not, hopefully not just catering to fans? Because sometimes fans ask what they think they want and what they actually need are two different things.
I fully believe
that. And there needs to be that fine line.
You don't need to give people just what they want. You need to give people, like, sometimes you need to look beyond what people are saying and try and discern where that statement is coming from.
Yeah. Right.
Because sometimes people say things and they didn't mean what they
said. I love the one that you see every now and then. This, why can't all these developers just come together and just make the best video game ever?
Why don't we just have one console?
why don't we have one
game?
Yeah,
just make one perfect game, guys.
Come on, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why can't you just make Call of FIFA? I don't understand.
And then the other side of that. Is the game that's so tunnel visioned in their project that they just make a mess. They make something that is very only has like 10 players that really love it.
Right.
And, you know, and those are fine.
Yeah.
You definitely want those players to experience games they love, of course.
Yeah.
But they're definitely not. They're going to fail.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's hard with, like, to that point. I think it's hard with companies like Zaum, the guys that made Disco Elysium. Mm-hmm. Like, as far as I know, that's the only game they ever made. Yeah. And now they're gone forever. Mm-hmm. So saying they're, like, one of my favorite developers is almost disingenuous in the sense that they only made one game.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. what I'm really saying is, man, Disco Elysium's a good game. Well, yeah. Not really talking about, like, the developer.
Those people as a team under that name made that one game.
Exactly.
I'm sure those people are off. And
if they doing reformed as something else, or if they went somewhere else, I would absolutely perk up and pay close attention to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep but an eye on them.
When I'm thinking about developers for this episode specifically, I'm trying to think of either very, very indie, like single, like auteur level of just like one person made this game and it was their vision. Like, it's not Chucklefish. They're the publisher, but who made Stardew Valley? The name of that dev. And he's like done it. He's hired people to like help him with stuff, but he does it all himself. And he does it like by hand. Like, he's still making updates, what, like 6 years later or something?
Yeah.
Like, and he makes that game exactly the way he wants to make it. And like, I have a ton of respect for people who
Concerned Ape.
Concerned Ape. Thank you.
Nice.
And there are a lot of just dudes out there, like Toby Fox, the guy that made Undertale.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Huge respect for him. Definitely one of my favorite developers. Incredible. Like, he made the music himself, and the music is legendary to me.
Yeah.
Made the game himself. And he's like, people have picked apart the code in that game and found that he just had almost no idea what he was doing when he was coding that game, because it's just like, all the dialogue in that game is like in one single bracket separated by commas. Like, mm-hmm. it's just, he just put it together however he could figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I have such immense respect for somebody who like buckles down and is like, no, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to get it done.
I'm going to learn as I go.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. And like that That's level incredible. Of dedication is like so respected in my eyes.
For sure.
Just like, huge shout out to people like that just are relentless about accomplishing their goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A developer that didn't really, I don't think of as a developer because they've got, you know, so many levels going on, but Nintendo is totally a developer.
Yeah.
Like, they absolutely. Have,
I guess you're right.
Studio. Yeah. Right. But like, they're a publisher. That's how I think of them. They're like, they're a corporation at this point. Like, they are huge and such a massive scale, but their games are so like, they are that studio that's like 99% of the time, let's say. They are so careful to like have a really curated art style that's very intentional and very thoughtful and creative. Yeah. And they always try to put some kind of new spin on things. And like, you can argue the level of success they have with that.
Yeah.
But for their size, there are very few developers I can think of that I would ever put at that caliber of consistent quality games.
I agree.
Like, thinking about, like, I was thinking about like Square. Mm-hmm. Like Square makes some incredible games. Like we've talked about Triangle Strategy and stuff like that before. Yeah. But then for every incredible game they make, they put this game out and you're like, you threw a lot of money at this for it to turn out
like that.
Like a 6 out of 10.
Yeah. Right. Like, yeah.
And I have to give Nintendo props for like avoiding that pitfall.
Yeah.
I think they've consistently performed.
It's hard to have a bad time with a Nintendo game.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. Like, consistently, you can throw $60 at a Nintendo game and you will almost always walk away feeling like it was money well spent.
Yeah. So,
shout out to them. And they make a lot of good just multiplayer, like, party games, pick up with your friends and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Mario Party is like, I don't need board games. I got Mario Party.
Well, I think people who know me know I strongly disagree with that.
Yeah.
Just from a moral standpoint, I think you're a bad person for playing Mario Party.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, no, but I definitely agree, because you know, with like Nintendo, you're always going to pay full price. You're not going to really get discounts on these
even
games.
If this game is 10 years old.
Never.
That's right. Yes. However, it's going to have a ton of creativity. It's going to have a lot of charm. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's probably going to have a neat or cool aesthetic that either you haven't seen before, or they're going to throw some new mechanics into a game that you haven't really seen before. Mm-hmm. And they consistently do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's one of the hardest things for a lot of developers, is just their consistency.
Yeah.
It's just like you said, it's like they'll have a really good game here, some mid games, and then towards, you know, then they start to pick it back up, and then they're like, oh, okay, now we're getting back on track.
Yeah.
Right. So, and it's just like, you can go through Nintendo through their whole library and be like, good, 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 good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah, totally. They've got their some misses or whatever, you know, but It's like they're very consistent, at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they will always be at 1080 and 30 frames per second locked.
That's, you know, that's true. Like, yeah. It like
it's impressive what they can do at 1080 at 30 frames.
Yeah, the fact that their games are technically and aesthetically proficient is saying something. Mm-hmm. Because there are plenty of games where you have to, you know, I've heard so many conversations about the PS5 being like, what mode should I run this game in? Because it's running quite badly, but I don't want it to look so ugly.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Whereas Nintendo's like, it's like a five-year-old, like, worse than a cell phone console. Do you guys just want to keep making games for that?
Yeah.
Do it.
Sure.
And they always turn out surprisingly good.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Luigi's Mansion. I'm like, dang, this game looks so good.
Yeah.
Metroid Dread. I'm like, geez, this looks freaking good.
How are you still squeezing so much?
How are you still doing that? Yeah. Especially like, not that I have an OLED Switch, but man, every time I see one, my nephews have one, and I'm like, geez, these games look great on this. Like,
yeah.
Just the crushed blacks. I'm like, man, that looks so good.
And that's the thing is like, I feel like, well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So I think we wrapped up. Skip over. Nintendo.
Yeah.
Favorite top developer.
Yeah. Nintendo is the number one developer.
Was that someone's favorite? Was that your favorite?
It's not my favorite,
I just think they're no, that's the, I mean, he was on my list because I just think it's, I mean, they're and consistent. That's my thing for sure for that. Okay.
I will say as a console developer, I think that they also, I know that if they announce a new console, because we were just talking about how they try to squeeze
it. It's hard to get a new
console. It's going to be hard to get, but it's going to be worth getting. It's going to be something.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, the Wii U was not great, but what I mean is it will always be something, like, meaningfully different than the last console that they released. Yeah. It's going to have something about it that they have a vision where they're like, we want our console to fulfill this specific thing.
Yeah.
It's never just, it looks better, it runs better.
I kind of hope that that's all they do with the next console, though.
I do, too. Nintendo.
As long as it's backwards compatible, like, I'll be all right.
Well, they finally hit the nail on the head. Like, they've been experimenting and experimenting with consoles and weird stuff, and they finally hit the nail on the head with the Switch. So it's
the
just
Wii
like,
was, like, okay, novel.
Now just improve upon the Switch.
And the Wii U was like, what? What is
it? Yeah.
This is cool for
it feels like every console up to the Switch was a prototype for the Switch.
And that's why we've been stuck. That's why
like the GameCube, it's got a handle on it. You can take it on the go, and then it's like, well, you got the 3DS, and then there's the Wii, and then it's like, and then they're like the Wii U, and they're like, we can't get it just right. And then the Switch is finally, they're like, okay, we got it.
There's
got
to be a guy just like at the top of the Nintendo Tower just slamming his fist on the table and being like, motion controls! Motion controls! What can you not get right?
Right.
And then they nailed it, finally.
Now it does everything.
And now I never use those motion controls. No. So
exactly.
Thanks. The next Switch will just be a VR set on the go.
Yeah.
That you just put on your head on the train.
While you're driving.
Let me play Mario in VR. It's fine.
Throw Cappy.
Yeah.
In VR. Slapping people in the face.
Yeah.
Just playing the Zelda game in a VR world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I would do it.
Sounds cool.
That's very cool.
Take my paycheck.
Ryan. Give me one of your favorite developers. Ryan,
keep the conversation going about your favorite developers.
I'll tell you what. I was trying to be, you know, this super hip, cool, my favorite developers, one you've never
always
heard
of. Always trying to play it cool.
But, you know, I just got to be true to myself.
And okay. I know about to say.
I know. He always sets it up like he's going to say something profound, and he's like, yeah, scumbag developer.
You know that he never plays it straight.
No.
So. What is you? What?
Larian Studios.
Oh, okay.
Get off my back.
Dang, you played it straight.
Yeah. Larian Studios.
You never
man.
Know with Ryan.
So,
okay.
I feel like I was the kid that was doing the cool thing before it was cool and playing Larian Studio games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good feeling, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was playing.
That's why I'm so pretentious.
Yeah. Divinity Original Sin 1. Mm-hmm. Played it. Loved it. And then Divinity Original Sin 2. Was just like,
whoa.
They improved upon everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they listened to all the feedback from one, and they just took every system and they took their time with Divinity Original Sin 2 and made this game that has taken up like 1,000 hours of gameplay from me.
Yeah.
And my wife.
My wife. Sorry. It's a muscle memory.
Yeah.
It's so funny how not funny that is.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Comedy poison for sure. You're welcome.
And so then this game gets teased, Baldur's Gate 3.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar.
And I felt like I was the only one talking about it. They came out with... it was early access. So you only play like the first chapter of the game, which was tons of content. Mm-hmm. And I even went to a Magic the Gathering pre-release night where we were playing a card game version of a Magic the Gathering version of this Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, like they had all the characters and stuff as cards.
And I asked people if they were playing the video game that these cards came from, mm-hmm. and they didn't know what I was talking about.
That's truly wild.
And
to me.
I was very confused. They were like, "You're just talking about D&D?" And I'm like, "No,
no, homie, it's a video game,
Baldur's Gate. I've put 100 hours into it, and you haven't. No, okay, it's great. You should check it out.
Didn't even know it existed. Okay, cool.
But I was so excited for this game, I didn't want to play too much of the demo because I didn't want to spoil too much.
Yeah.
But the game finally came out, and it blew up like. I did not expect.
Oh yeah.
And Larian Studios didn't even expect how much.
Yeah, no kidding.
They were going to get
that
from
is
this thing.
Extremely true.
But they're super, just like open about the development. They love hearing what people think of the game, negative or positive.
Yeah.
And they want to improve upon that. I think they're actually stepping away from another Baldur's Gate game, and I think they're going back to their Divinity stuff. But I think they're going to take what they learned from Baldur's Gate. And incorporating that to Divinity, so I'm very excited about that. But
I'm
whatever
excited.
Direction they go, I'm going to be following them.
Yeah,
I'll be there.
I'm excited to see what they do outside of a licensed product.
Yeah.
Like they'll have, I think, I'll have a lot more creative
but
freedom.
I think they meet that fine line of like they have a passion and but they're also super receptive. So they're just like humble about the process.
Yeah,
and. That's just exciting to see in a developer because you know everything they put out is just going to be worth your money.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I played Divinity 2 because you put me onto it. But then when I saw Baldur's Gate, literally, like when they had the early access stuff, I was like, I'm not going to play this because I know I'm going to buy this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to play this to know that I'm going to put 60 down on it as soon as it comes out.
Right.
So it was like, their reputations spoke for itself to the point where I was like, I don't even need to play your early release. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to wait, and I'm just going to put money down sight unseen, which is how I do with a lot of developers that I trust, I guess.
Right. But yeah, absolutely.
It takes a lot to get to the point. There are not a lot of developers where I'm like, if you put a game out, I'll buy it.
Mm-hmm.
It says your name in the little bottom right corner. Just spend money on it.
I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But one of the developers that is that way for me is definitely Atlas, and I'm sure
I knew you were gonna say Atlas.
I wanted to be like the whatever you said, but right, then
hold on one second.
No,
keep going. I'll be right.
Keep going.
I don't think we can keep.
Well, not keep going.
Hello and welcome.
Keep everything going.
Hello and welcome. Do you want to turn the fan on?
No, because I'll be like.
Oh yeah, fair enough. Okay.
I just turned it down.
Okay. I know that Atlas is not a particularly surprising choice for me, but it's
I'm
also
not surprised at all.
Surprise me next time.
It's like Larian in the sense that I just feel like they are such an extremely high level of performance every time.
Yeah.
There are bad Atlas games. There's no doubt about that. But even the bad Atlas games have so much personality to them, and they have such a unique vision for what that was supposed to be that I feel like I almost can't fault them for coming out with a bad game every few years or whatever.
Yeah.
Because they're consistently super creative, which is really important to me. And they always like, even if the game, you can feel the DNA of other games that have come before them, which is definitely true of Atlas because they have such a distinctive art style. But then they will shift that, like the difference between Persona and Metaphor is like you can clearly see that those delineate from the same place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Metaphor still has so many unique, interesting ideas that to me it almost feels like they just had too many ideas to keep doing mm-hmm. the Persona games, and they were like, I have to do something else with all these new ideas and concepts and stuff that's rolling around in my brain.
Yeah.
And another thing that I really like about them is that they are like Nintendo in the sense that they try to always bring something fresh and new. Persona 3, 4, and 5 are all meaningfully different from each other, which is why you'll always get people arguing about which one's the best. They're not clearly improved upon each iteration. They are kind of their own unique thing, built on the same bones, so to speak. But also, they do totally different genres. Like, they've done grid-based tactics games. They've mm-hmm. done the Persona games, which is like turn-based, but with a dating sim element mm-hmm. to them.
Yeah.
They've done puzzle games. Mm-hmm. They've done everything.
All they have a the diverse
Yeah. And it's hard to execute that many different games that well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So even though it's a very predictable choice, I have to say.
Yeah, I will praise Atlas because they published Demon's Souls.
That's true.
Yep.
We hit that.
Again?
Yeah.
They published it,
which means...
And we're not here to talk about publishers.
No, but...
That's next episode.
They brought it here, mm-hmm. so...
Mm-hmm. I mean,
every time...
I give them credit. So, they're the reason that seed got planted over on this side of the ocean.
Exactly. They're not the reason.
They are too.
Mm-hmm.
I love Alice. You can't take this.
Don't take it from me.
I think it's just consistently...
Yeah.
Exciting to see what they do next. At the end of the day, that's the most important thing to me.
Yeah, I agree.
You can't.
They definitely have a reputation that they earned.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I definitely
mm-hmm.
agree.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, I love it. Mine is gonna be super predictable.
Don't say it. Hang on, it's one of two. Capcom.
I didn't know we get to guess.
What was the second one?
If it's Capcom, I'm gonna be quite surprised because I'm going to immediately name a bunch of bad Capcom games.
Whatever, they're all good. Okay. I'm just kidding. Capcom.
Yeah.
You guys are surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me get my list out.
Okay.
And I'll give you a reason why they're good.
Yeah, I love and hate Capcom. I love and hate
That's
Capcom.
The thing is, like, the highs are extremely high with Capcom, as we've discussed.
Indeed.
But the lows are pretty low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Between that, like, 2008 to 2013 era of Capcom was mm-hmm. rough for them.
That's pretty rough.
But they still had some good winners in there. So,
okay, so
to me,
go on.
They feel like, well, obviously, when I was young, all their games were just like top notch. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Resident Evil, Devil May Cry, mm-hmm. Onimusha. You guys know.
Kids love the tank controls.
Oh,
kids
man.
Love the cameras.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially the new kids.
Yeah. But to me, they were consistently creative. They were trying new things.
That's true. That's very true.
You know what I mean? And so, you know, they did Okami. They did God Hand.
Yeah.
They did Chaos Legion, which when I went back and played it, I was like, man, this game is not as good as I remember. But it was still a new idea that they were using basically personas.
Yeah. Fail by being creative instead of succeeding by being boring.
Yeah.
I don't want to see a technically good game mm-hmm. that is just so uninteresting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Make a togi.
Gosh, man. That'd be awesome. Yeah. I would love that. But anyways, one thing with Capcom is I feel like every time I play a Capcom game, it's going to feel good to play. I always like their designs. Their artistic creative department is always like pushing the boundaries, but I feel like they're always cool. Like, I think the characters look cool. The way they move and how they move in the environment is always cool and interesting, and I really appreciate that. Like, sometimes it's just like when you play a game and it's like the character's movements are so awkward or stiff, and it's like, man, I hate the way this character mm-hmm. moves. It feels like so janky. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And every time I play a Capcom game, I'm like, at least I know I'm going to like the movement.
Mm-hmm.
I
always feel like they're trying to reinvent the wheel when it comes to controls. Like, it feels like their controls games are from an alternate universe mm-hmm. where, like, that's just how they play games in this alternate universe.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I just think
that's just something I'm not used to.
What like, if we went back?
Yeah, go ahead. Like,
let's go back to the Nintendo 64 days where the C buttons moved you.
Uh-huh. Well, what's the C stand for? Camera.
Camera,
right?
Obviously.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
But yeah, like flick the left thumbstick up twice and you'll dodge roll. And it's like,
yeah,
You know it's B. You know it's B.
Bro, you know I want a button.
Yeah.
Sometimes I move back and I change my mind and now I'm rolling.
That's right. Exactly. So
that's how I feel about Capcom games. It's like, you have to, for me, I have to like give it an honest effort before I can enjoy it.
I do feel like the level of investment required to see if you're going to click with the game is higher than most
developers. Unless you're just a Capcom player like Taylan, who just jumps into it and is used to these
crazy
controls. Yeah, he's ready to suffer for the art.
Yeah, it's just what he's used to.
That's right.
Man. Yeah.
So just for context, like what is a Capcom game that you've bounced off of? And what is one... That was stopped automatically. I didn't do that. The camera did that.
Is it recorded or not?
It is now, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I just, for my own personal curiosity, I'm wondering, like, what is the two ends of that spectrum for you?
Well,
of a game that you've loved and a game that you've been like, Capcom, what are you doing?
Okay. Well, I'll give you a real good example because it's a newer game. I love the original Dragon's Dogma.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, I do not
That's
like.
Right. I forgot that you bounced hard off the second one.
I do not like it.
I have they not did. Played Dragon's Dogma 2. I played the crap out of the first one.
Mm-hmm. And they
still
did.
Still going to.
Yeah.
Just waiting for it to go on sale.
That's right.
Same.
Yeah.
Well, maybe by then they'll fix some of this thing. Because I don't know. They just had a lot of quality of life improvements they could have done.
Mm-hmm.
And they just refused to do because they were like, well, this is, you have to play the game this way. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
But in this case, it is.
But in this case, for me,
it feels less like a holistic. It is a holistic vision, but the holistic vision seems to be rooted more in stubbornness.
Right.
Yeah. Then, like, I know the creative director for that game was like, they asked him why, like, they didn't have, like, actual multiplayer, because it was a huge request.
Yeah.
Yes. Going back to listening to your plan.
Yeah.
And he said, when I was a kid, I wanted to play D&D with other kids and I never got to. And I wanted to make a game where people had to understand what it felt like for me to have to play D&D by myself in my head.
Because that's how it happened to me.
Because that is literally the Aqua Teen skit of do it to him because that's how it happened to me.
Yeah.
It like no consideration for will this make the game a more solidified experience? Will it make it a more satisfying experience? It was like, my vision is to make people understand how bored I was, and I'm gonna make them see how bored I was. Which just seems an extremely bizarre way to frame
make a game.
Your game.
I don't know if that's like what he meant when he said those things.
That's true. So we're translating from Japanese off. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
take
yeah.
it with a grain of salt, I guess. Yeah. That's true. But yeah, I
he
just
could be saying like, well, I didn't have anybody to play.
Yeah.
You don't have anybody to play, but you'll have these characters.
I wanted the lonely people in the world to have a game where they didn't feel lonely. This might be what he
could
meant.
Be, yeah. But how much cooler would it have been if we all three could go and take down giant monsters together?
I agree.
Like, literally climb. I mean, outside of the Monster Hunter series, you know what I mean? Being able to climb up.
Look, I'm on this Cyclops head and I'm spinning in 360 degrees, no problem.
Forget Monster Hunter. Yeah. I want Monster Factory. I want to crawl all over them, three stories tall.
Yeah.
And I want to just hang on top of their head like a little raccoon.
Yeah. So it's like not every game hits for me. Like, I don't like the movement also in Dragon's Dogma 2. It feels more stiff, where in the first one, it felt super fluid. And like, if you were going to jump, you knew exactly how far you were going to go, if you were going to be able to grab onto certain objects. And this one, they just feel more clunky and stiff. So it feels like, I don't know.
I feel like that kind of points to another important consideration for this kind of topic, is like, developers can often be like, Capcom is a publisher, but they also have like their own internal development studios.
Yeah.
And because they have multiple creative directors that are doing this stuff, it becomes hard to say, like, and this is true with Atlus or anything else. It's like, when we talk about a developer, are we talking about the creative director? Are we talking about the person in charge of that particular project?
Yeah.
Are we talking about kind of an averaged out opinion of this developer? Like, for me, Atlus is their creative directors are the ones who determine what those games look and play like.
Yeah.
But they're almost always they're at least in the same book if they're not on the same page. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Capcom has distinctive characteristics to their games, But the first thing that pops in my head is like movement and camera are like the distinctive Capcom things. And like how many buttons should you have to press to do a single action?
How many mechanics can you throw into a game?
Yeah. Yes. And I think about, I don't have like a necessarily an answer prepared for this because I'm just thinking about it in real time. But I think when you're thinking about your favorite developer, it's important to consider like how big is this developer? How many different people have their hands on this project? And like, is it a result of the creative director? Is that like, are we following like Miyamoto? Mm-hmm. Are we following like, who's the guy that made Kingdom Hearts? I can't think of his name.
No, I don't remember.
Dang it.
Is it Tosh?
I'm going to say no right off the bat. I don't think that's... But that's my point. My point is, like, he has gone on to do a lot of different games that are totally different. And I followed him because I was, like... When I was younger, especially, I loved Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
But then it was one of those things where it was, like, I don't know.
Tetsuya Nomura.
Nomura is the name I was looking for. Yeah, Tetsuya Nomura. Thank you. And some of his games are amazing. And some of his games, I'm like... I'm not really even sure what you were going for here.
Right. Yeah.
But is he a part of Square? You know what I mean? Like how do you break those things apart? So for you, does it meaningfully matter when you're looking at Capcom projects? Are you like, wait, who's headlining this thing? Or are you like, okay, Capcom's making it. It's got my attention.
Capcom.
Okay.
Great. Just as a team.
Like, I mean, yeah, for me, I mean, that's also true for me for Atlas. Like, I don't even think I could tell you the name of the creative director for Persona.
I think Yakiyama-san, but...
Oh, okay.
I think he's the...
Good pull.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's the creative director of... Well, he's the creative director of Street Fighter.
Oh.
The new one.
Interesting.
So that's why I went to a different direction.
Do they have Personas? We already have a Persona fighting game. We don't need one.
This guy.
Yeah. But yeah, so... Part of it, I think it is a weird amalgamation. Like, I don't think you can just say, well, it's this or it's this.
Right, yeah,
developer, exactly. Like, developers become something other than, they are greater than the sum of their parts, right, so to speak. So I think it's interesting to think about, like, what does a developer mean when Atlas has been around for 25 years or 30 years or whatever, and have consistently made great games that are all over the place that you probably couldn't even call them out if you saw them because they've been around so long.
Right, exactly.
But
in saying that, you make a good point though, because it'll be Ryan's next one.
My favorite creative director is Fred Moore.
We're not talking about creative directors.
I had to say an English name.
Why?
Super white name, the whitest name I could think of.
I had to bring some love back home.
Okay. No, it's I'm gonna say FromSoft.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And the director is?
I used to know. Can't remember his name.
Miyazaki.
Miyazaki.
Exactly.
The same guy as the Studio Ghibli.
FromSoft. I would be like, what is his next
game? Yeah. You hit that? Which, that's happened with, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name.
Or like Shinji Mikami.
Thank you. Yeah, Shinji Mikami.
Is that really who you're thinking?
Shinji Mikami.
Sure it's not Fred?
They're all from Japan, I'm now realizing. But the guy that made Metal Gear, he's like so famous. Yeah, how did I ever forget his name?
Like, his name pops up with pure black background and white text.
Yeah, literally. On every game he makes. And he's such... Talk about an auteur that exists within a developer. Like,
indeed.
He is not... He acts like he is an indie dev. He's the only person making his game. Uh-huh. Like, it is rare to see a creative director have that level of control over a game to be like, if he leaves, we're never making another Metal Gear Solid because we just wouldn't know how to do it without him.
Yeah.
And to have such a signature style, despite the fact that his team is probably gigantic, is really, that alone is impressive to me. I'm not like a diehard Metal Gear Solid fan, but I have to respect how he was able to carve out that much of an identity, even within a huge team like that. Like, that's pretty impressive.
I agree.
So I saved us from talking about FromSoft.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, man, the level of excitement when a FromSoft game's coming out, specifically in the Soul series.
Yeah.
There's, you know, they've got...
They're not just like popping games out left and right.
No.
You have to wait. You got a good little...
Yeah, you got three or four years, and then you've got a gem coming out. Yeah. But
how'd you like Armored Core?
Didn't play Armored Core.
It's not too late.
I intended to play it and never got around to it.
Yeah.
Then I heard the reviews were pretty much like, if you're not building this one specific mech, then you're doing it wrong. And
yeah, I did. I was a little colored by that particular.
But I just think I just need to do it and build whatever mech I want and not worry about being.
I think that's exactly
what you should do. Yeah. You're going to build a great looking mech.
Yeah. You know what I like about FromSoft? They got so much style.
They got style?
With three S's.
I actually agree and disagree.
Okay.
Elden Ring, man, especially the DLC, I keep picking up ugly armor set after ugly armor
listen,
set.
Listen, I'm not going to disagree with you there. Gosh. And technically the same thing is true of Armored Core. They have like parts where I'm like, why would I ever want to look like this? Why would I want anything to look like this?
Yeah.
And they're like, but that's how it functions. And I'm like, then I'm not going to use
it. The interesting pieces, the pieces of equipment that give you interesting stats or like meaningful changes to your character are insane looking. Mm-hmm. Like you look at the top builds, like PvP builds, and it's like Mask of the Father with like this big old round thing of armor.
The Onion Knight looking.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like, you look crazy.
And we hate
and it feels sharper. It feels like they're trying to punish you for having good stats. Like, you've got to give somewhere.
Yeah.
Can't you just look
be
great.
Ugly.
Yeah.
That's part of your strategy.
Yeah. Like, the Artorias armor is, like, one of my favorite looking armors from Dark Souls 1.
And that's what I'm saying. White Glint
and it's from just fine.
Armor Core.
Yeah. Doesn't do anything special.
Yeah. He looks incredible. One of the most iconic mechs you could possibly find. But and there are mechs in that game that you can't help but laugh when you look at them.
It's like they're afraid everyone will just wear the same set because it's a good set and it looks great. And it's like, just make more great-looking sets.
Well, I think that creative director in particular, I've read interviews and stuff with him, and he seems particularly influenced by, like, he wants to bring a level of historical accuracy to the weapons and the armor and stuff.
Sekiro is where you'll see that the most.
Yeah, that's true.
I actually watched a whole YouTube clip on Sekiro and its historical accuracy, which is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Even the way he fights, like he fights a knight, and the way he fights that knight is he gets up on the shoulders and he stabs the katana like into the spots where he's missing the armor.
Yeah.
And there's like a guy who studies historical like weaponry and stuff like that, and he's like, that's exactly how they would fight the English and things like that. So
that's super cool.
Yeah,
that's
cool. Interesting.
I love that. It's always fun for me to dig into a game, which I think is why I like games like that, where like even if I'm not good at the game, I can still enjoy like the subtext. It's not necessarily subtext, but you know what I'm saying. Like you can still pick apart that game and the fiction and there's such a deep amount of respect for the subject matter from the creator that I really like seeing those parts of them put into the game.
Yeah. Well, the reason I love FromSoft games so much is because they do offer a challenge. They're not a game that's like you come home and you sit down and you farm your strawberries.
Time to relax.
And you may put a window in your house and you go talk to the villagers and build up a relationship. Now, this is for gamers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a friend text me the other day who's like, my therapist told me that I should play more video games. So I bought the Elden Ring DLC and spent the entire night screaming and pulling on my hair, but I do feel better today.
It's somehow cathartic.
I was like, I don't think you picked the right. I don't think that's what your therapist meant, right?
Yeah.
I think they're trying to get more money out of you if they
did. One thing that I'm looking forward to now that the DLC is out and Elden Ring is done.
Yeah.
Now I'm like,
What's next? Yeah.
I'm ready.
It's Elden Ring 2.
What's next is you give the guy a break, Talon. Play the DLC. Let the poor man rest.
Oh, I think they said something about how they're going to change up multiplayer on the next Elden Ring.
I hope so. The mod that we found that lets you just always be together is game-changing.
If you're listening to this podcast,
life-changing.
And you've played Elden Ring.
You haven't.
And you haven't checked out Seamless Co-op mod
on
the
so
Nexus,
good.
Go check it out. The creator, I think it's just one dude, is working on that mod. He's updated, like there's like 3 days in a row where it was like update.
Yeah.
And you have to download the latest version for it to work, but pretty simple installation.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Like 3 seconds.
Incredible.
And
I don't want to play it any other way.
It
now.
Changes it completely. I'm excited for it. When Talon buys it, you know, I think later today he said he's going to buy it.
Yeah.
And
he was on his phone buying it a minute ago.
That's I
think it's downloading.
I think it's in his cart. Yeah.
It's in his cart. Here, let me push the buy button for you, Dan.
And it's going to change it up. you can treat it like playing with your friends. So
that developer, the guy that made that mod, shout out to him.
That's my favorite developer. He's great.
He nailed it.
He or she is great. I'm not actually
hardworking guy.
Certain
hardworking person.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hardworking
person.
But yeah, when a FromSoft game comes out, I know it's going to be the sense of adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Is going to be top notch.
Yeah,
I'm going to be an explorer. Right. I'm going to be fighting evil,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to love it.
Yeah,
really. I don't usually do the evil path.
I don't always agree with everything they do, but that's fine. I don't have to. I still enjoy it. The multiplayer is his the games he's come out with. The multiplayer is his vision. He has a vision for it, and people don't understand it.
For better or worse, that's very true.
And some people do understand it. Like, I get where he's going with it. He wants it like a single player game with. Like, you have the option to have your friends play with you, and you have the option to sabotage people that are trying to play a single player game.
Yeah.
But that's not what really most people want. I feel like they want to just be able to play with their friends.
Yeah.
So that for me, I see past it. I can still play with my friends somewhat.
Yeah.
It's just a little tedious sometimes.
Yeah.
But the seamless co-op mod fixes all that. It's amazing.
Sounds awesome.
So I hope that they, go a different direction with the multiplayer, but if they don't, I'm still buying that game and I'm still playing it.
Yep.
Sorry, I had to look up a developer that I wanted to give a shout out to.
Okay. They also made Enchanted Arms, which was pretty great on the 360.
Oh, I did not realize that they made the
developer.
Enchanted Arms.
That was the developer.
That was one of the games I almost put on my
comeback list.
What's the episode we did on
Hidden Gems?
Hidden Gems, thank you. Couldn't think of the phrase we used. Yeah,
it's like a Final Fantasy style game in the time where the JRPGs were big.
Yeah, but there's like
big.
A grid element to it, right? Like, you place your summons and your characters on a grid before the fight. Like, you have like a team set up kind of thing, I think. And they can move. I think it was very unique, whatever it was. And I remember...
It had great style.
Yeah, it was a cool game.
Yeah, I remember it being super great cutscenes too. What,
have they made anything other than that and the Armored Core and Souls games? They had to have made something.
Nothing rings a bell.
Yeah. I mean, they made the old cool stuff, but I mean, I don't think that really...
The most they've branched off with is like Bloodborne and then Sekiro and then Armored Core.
I definitely feel like those have to fall in the Souls category.
Yes.
Though. Yeah, and I will say, though, I respect when the new Armored Core game came out, everybody was kind of expecting it to be... have a lot more of an overlap with the Souls-like game.
Yeah.
But they committed to like its own distinct style, and I really like that they didn't move to merge all their games into one style. Like,
that's
it's still very much its own thing. That's cool.
So you've played?
No, I have not played Fires of Rubicon.
Oh, okay.
Just curious.
Which is the new Armored Core game.
Yeah.
It is.
So what's your next developer?
Just a single person, Ben Esposito.
Okay.
They made a mobile game called Donut County, which is just like absolutely exploding with personality and charm.
Uh-huh.
A very interesting art style. The game that I showed you about the hiking game where you like travel together. It's like multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
That's Ben Esposito, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Donut County is just like you're this girl and your friend is a raccoon. And while you're at work, your friend is supposed to be delivering donuts to people with a drone, but they order some product that lets them create like a black hole in the ground, and they're just goofing around with it. And you move this hole on the ground, like an old Acme cartoon style. It's just like a big black circle.
Yeah.
And everything that falls into it makes the hole a little bigger.
Mm,
and every level is like a different area of the town, and you're trying to swallow everything up in this hole.
To what purpose?
Honestly, I don't remember why he's doing it.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's like eventually you have to like go down in the hole and see like where all this stuff is going and everything. And it's like, I like it because it has a ton of heart. Like, there is like an actual like message that is relatable that he's like trying to communicate through the gameplay. It's not just like simple, goofy story. Like, the characters are really interesting. You're texting back and forth with this raccoon while you're at work, and one of the things you can do is send a goose emoji, and you can do that whenever you want, and they'll always send one back immediately. So you just like spam the goose emoji, like little stuff like that feels like it doesn't feel like someone trying to create a culture that they are not a part of, that they've only seen and they're replicating. It feels like very much of the moment, very much like something relatable to you.
Okay.
And like I said, just a ton of charm, very, very cool music and everything. And everything they've done so far has been an absolute banger for me. Yeah. And I like shouting out small developers. Like,
yeah.
if somebody's listening to this episode and they're looking for a developer to check out that they haven't heard of, I want to put somebody on here that mm-hmm. isn't Atlas that I haven't talked about 100 mm-hmm. times.
Right.
So, and that's like a mobile game. It's like $5 or something. So it's super low stakes. It's super low stakes if you want to go check out
a new I've actually meant to play that so game.
It's really funny.
I'm very excited for Big Walk.
Thank you. Yes.
You sent me that video and I was like immediately just like, I'm all about this game. House
developers or is that already come out?
Hmm?
Big Walk is not the same people who made
Untitled Goose Game, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Oh, I must have. That's not Ben Esposito then.
Yeah.
But it, Let me make sure. But yeah, I think
House, isn't it? Isn't it just called House?
That sounds right.
Okay, go ahead.
I was gonna say that Donut County it feels similar in like the style and the charm.
House and is actually the developer behind the Untitled Goose Game.
His style feels very similar to that. So if you liked Untitled Goose Game,
What do you mean? Oh, pat on the back. Jesus
Christ. I was like, is your back itching?
I didn't know what I was. I thought it was like, pop your shoulder because you dislocated it.
So that's a good reference point, actually. I thought it was him. It's not.
Obviously, it is House behind Big Walk.
Okay.
So
if you like House, if you're looking forward to Big Walk, tide yourself over with Donut County.
Okay.
And he's definitely made some other games. I just don't know
off
the top of my head what they are. So
yeah.
I love little indie developers because so much of their personality shines through and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like it's much easier for them to fully, they might be technically limited, but in terms of style and writing and music and stuff like that, that's really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather play like a small contained holistic game.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a lot of time for big long games nowadays anyway. Right. Mm-hmm. So those kind of singular experiences like that, where I can walk away within a couple days and be like, what a fun little experience I had.
Right. Yeah.
That's
is Angel Matrix the name of the
not that I know of. Okay. I don't know who
it says that is. Donut County developers Ben Esposito and Angel Matrix.
Interesting. What does it say what else he's made? Let's both get on our phones while we're on mm-hmm. camera.
This is here. Good footage.
Good footage. But yeah, I mean, I just wanted to shout somebody out.
Shout out to House for sure. That's one of my favorites.
It's fine. They're fine. Mm. They already got their shout out.
Oh.
Go ahead. Somebody
Big wait, Walk.
Preferably it's on my top. Man, that's all. I mean,
Big Walk's on my
you guys covered. List.
Yeah, Big Walk looks great. House.
I had Larian, FromSoft, Nintendo, and Capcom. So
okay,
you
guys, yeah, we all
hit, just smashed them all out.
Yeah, man. I guess there's a reason why we deal with each other.
That's right.
Deal is the right word. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry to the.
It'll always for be being after the podcast is over. I'll be like, oh man, I had this.
I was trying to bring more content to you guys, so you'll have to excuse me for being on my phone.
No, you're good.
That's your perfect. Phone has a ton of content.
Well, I wanted some specific content that I didn't find. But yeah, that's shout out your favorite developers to us.
Indeed.
Let us know. What is it
about? Don't just shout developers' names. Tell us why.
No, go in the street and shout their name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then record it and send it to us.
That's actually, I'd like that.
And we'll make a super cut of every person screaming developers in New York City.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always interesting to hear other people's recommendations or if they just have something about a particular developer that always hits for them.
Yeah, for sure.
I love to disagree with people.
I love to one-up people. Oh, you think that's cool? Wait till you hear about this developer.
That's exactly right.
So, let us know. Email us.
Yeah.
Did I save podcast at Gmail? That's us on every platform. Did I save podcast?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're on TikTok. We're on Blue Sky. And if you're watching us, thank you. Leave a comment, like, subscribe.
Subscribe and leave a comment for maybe the next topic.
Absolutely. Leave us a recommendation. Mm-hmm. And then if you're listening to us on any of the podcast platforms or on all of them, please leave us a review. That helps us out. Gets us some visibility. It has to be 5 stars. We have to be perfect. Uh-huh.
Yeah. The last idea I had for an episode, I scraped out of the bottom of my bucket with a little teaspoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I need something.
Yeah, please. Any recommendations with a little teaspoon? Is this anything?
Yeah.
It says
and, developers. Keep Jared in your thoughts as he goes through a process.
always keep
Jared's having a ton of fun editing videos.
Yeah, right, you guys are going to get such a cool... If you haven't seen it by the time we're talking about this, by the time you hear this, you're never going to see it. Uh-huh. You're never going
to
know.
You've been waiting to hear about this video game.
Yeah.
That Jared's been trying to tell you about.
The suspense.
And yeah. It's... The First Descendant has been sitting in your cart, which is a free game.
I'm going to bleep out the First Descendant, so it's just going to be like...
Keep it a mystery. So they'll never know. Make people think they want to hear it. Trick people into thinking it's interesting. And they're
going to be like,
No, instead of bleep it, just say Warframe.
If we're going to do some inside baseball... Yeah. So much Warframe footage. I'm like, I don't think I can use this much Warframe on an episode about First Descendant. I don't think I'm allowed.
I'm crying. Okay. All right. Thanks, guys, for watching. Yeah. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers.
Don't forget to save.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget to save. Don't forget to save.